All right, everybody, welcome back to episode 62 of the Strength Academy podcast. Grayson here, joined by Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
All right, guys, so we're back. No guest this week. I hope y'all enjoyed our interview with Mike Mansour last week. If you haven't listened to that one, go back and check it out. A lot of interesting conversation happened there. So we're recording in the gym today. We are changing our locale, so we're in the midst of our motivation. So one thing that we kind of ran into this week is that we've kind of started to, instead of scaling back our team program to fit the number of days everybody can make, we've decided to have two team programs going this week, and a three-day program and a five-day program. And I thought that today's show, because this is usually talking about what we've talked about in the gym this week,
sure,
could be like factors that you use to determine training frequency. Because I think that a lot of times people feel that more is better, and that hasn't always been the case for you or me. Okay. So I think that it would be kind of interesting to talk about different factors that kind of determine how much weightlifting should I be doing. I think one thing that we've kind of done, just talking about us for a second, is that both of us have gone down to training 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week,
right,
over the last couple of years, and have actually made better progress in doing so. So I think that one of the things that you have to factor in is there's how much you want to train, and there's how much you can train, and those two things don't always overlap.
Yeah, that's true. So I'll tell you a little bit about my experience with how I started training. So I started off doing CrossFit, and I did CrossFit for, you know, a couple of years, from probably like 2013 to 2016, 17. And then weightlifting got put in the mix somewhere in the middle of that. So like around 2015, I started to do weightlifting in conjunction with my CrossFit training because I wanted to get stronger. So I thought that I would do two-a-days. And so what I would do is every morning, I would work out about 5 or 6 times a week. And if you keep in mind, like, I was in my lower 30s at that time, probably like 31, 32. And I had a little bit better ability to recover, but doing two-a-days, doing some weightlifting training, because what I started off doing was I started off doing Mike Bergner's training with CrossFit weightlifting. So I added Mike Bergner's CrossFit weightlifting programming into my regular CrossFit programming. So I was doing weightlifting in the morning, early before I went to work, and then after work, I would go do CrossFit stuff. And so I was only able to maintain that for, you know, maybe like 6 months before my body started breaking down, and I started having a hard time recovering from workouts and things like that. And it's just the volume was too much. Like, I tried to take on too much at once. So as I progressed in my training and I started to dedicate myself more to weightlifting, I dialed back those days of like 6 days a week to maybe 5. And then as I got older and then I started to transition completely weightlifting, I stopped doing 5 day a week programs. Like, I did Catalyst programs for a long time where they're like 5 days a week training. And after a while, I was just like, you know what, I'm not making as much progress as I want to, because even though I was getting a little bit stronger, my technique sucked. I didn't really have anybody to watch me or coach me or anything like that. I was doing a lot of this on my own. And so, like, providing my own feedback to myself was a hard process. So I eventually went and teamed up with Grayson, and Grayson started to dial in some of the things in my technique, but I had to dial back my training quite a bit because the amount of volume in my training that I could handle as I got older started to diminish. Well, my ability to recover is just not as well as it used to be. So, like, I have to take more time to recover, but I've actually made more progress as a weightlifter doing less days a week of training than I did ever doing 2 days doing CrossFit and trying to fit weightlifting in there.
Yeah, I mean, when I was starting out doing CrossFit, I basically did the same thing. We would do 2 a days, like 3 days a week. We'd do a Catalyst program in the mornings, and then like extra conditioning stuff, like two classes or whatever it is that we were doing. And I was just doing a tremendous amount of stuff, and I was, you know, still trying to stay in shape with regards to running when I got out of the Army. So I was going for runs and trying to lift,
yeah,
and doing CrossFit. And, you know, I was getting stronger, but I was also still a beginner. So, like, you can kind of, like, of course you're going to be making progress there.
Yeah.
But that started to slow down. And, you know, over the years, it's been like, okay, well, I need to train 6 days a week because that's what the best people do. And it's like, well, no. I mean, maybe you should just train better less times
per week.
So where I've kind of landed now is, you know, I do four weightlifting workouts and one kind of body weight and stretching workout in the middle of the week to break it up. And that ratio just works way better for me. Because my problem is that if I'm training a lot, I get really tight.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to balance my flexibility with my, you know, training and make sure that I'm being able to do the things that I want to do. And I'm not so beat up from doing tons and tons of volume that flexibility starts to go. So I think that one of the things, you know, so we're going to talk about a few factors that we use to determine training frequency. And I think that it's important to remember that there isn't a right number for everybody. There isn't a general rule with this. So one of them would be, you know, like one thing you have to look at is, you know, what are you doing other than lifting? So if you're biking 2 to 3 days a week and doing yoga one day a week, you probably don't need to be doing weightlifting 5 days a week because that's kind of just a lot of things jockeying for your time. And it might be that you want to do a lot of weightlifting, but if you have other fitness goals that you're working towards, so if you're doing a lot of CrossFit, if you're doing, you know, triathlon training, whatever it might be that you're doing.
And running and biking stuff.
Yeah. So you just want to make sure that, you know, you're looking at what you're doing other than lifting. Because if you're saying we should be doing 5 workouts a week, those other things outside of weightlifting count as workouts. So if you're doing, you know, 3 biking sessions and 3 weightlifting sessions, you're training 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to remember that all training kind of counts as it's not just how many weightlifting workouts, it's just training in general. So if you're doing hot yoga a couple days a week and biking a couple days a week and then coming in and doing weightlifting, you just have to factor in, like, am I actually working out 9 times a week? And is that a sustainable rate for me to be training? So I think that you have to look at what you're doing other than lifting and kind of where, if you have kind of a myriad of goals where you're trying to improve cardio stuff, or you just get bored doing the exact same thing all the time, like having a variety in your training is great, but you just have to remember that every workout, regardless if it's snatch or clean and jerk or biking for 2 hours, counts as a workout.
Yeah. And I think that applies to like other sports too, because like for me in the wintertime, I love to snowboard, and snowboarding has a huge effect on your legs. Like it has a huge impact on your legs. So I went snowboarding on Friday, and I didn't know if I'd be able to recover in time to do my front squat workout today. And but it went well. Like I didn't push myself too hard on the mountain, but I knew that like I had training coming up, so I didn't do anything crazy either. Like I didn't take an exhaustive amount of runs. I kind of called it a day before things went to, you know, to garbage, and I hurt myself on the mountain. So like I have a better awareness of like how to push my body in other sports because of weightlifting. Like I know where the line is. It's like, oh, I'm getting tired, I'm gonna start getting sloppy and I'm gonna fall. So I know when to call it quits. So like I know that if I was trying to do other sports besides weightlifting, let's say you want to do a triathlon or bike or do spin class or something like that, you have to take into account that you're using the same muscle groups in both of these situations. And it's like that Venn diagram where things overlap. Like, what's your ability to recover when you're using that same muscle group more than a couple times in a row in a week? And so like that's why we talk about like training frequency. So it's not just about weightlifting, it's about what you're doing outside of it too. So like if you're a multi-sport athlete and you have other things going on in your life, how does weightlifting fit into that, and how are you covering from the rest of your week of workouts in addition to your weightlifting training? So that's why, you know, there's a measured approach to how you do these things, and you don't want to hurt yourself by overextending yourself or burn yourself out because you're exercising too much, and that's possible.
Yeah, and I think that you know, not just factoring in other exercise, but what you're doing for a job.
Right.
So when I worked as a line technician and keg delivery boy, I was hauling, putting kegs on shelves and loading and unloading trucks and kind of doing that for, you know, 5 or 6 hours a day.
Right.
I was driving a lot, and then it would be driving immediately into cold, lifting a keg back into driving. And during that phase, I had to drop my training down to 3 days a week in order to continue to make progress, because it was taking up a lot of my recovery ability just to recover from doing manual labor for work. And so if you work a very physical job where you're maybe on your feet all day, or you are required to lift, or you, you know, you're a mason and you're laying bricks, you know, you have to factor in what you're doing as an occupation as well. Because if, you know, you try to train 6 days a week and you, you know, are a truck driver, like, you might not have the, like, there's going to be some kind of difficulties recovering there.
Yeah,
so I'd say that's factor number one, is looking at not just physical stuff that you're doing, but also, are you having a really, really tough time in your personal life?
Right.
That can dictate how well you can recover and how much you should be doing. Because if you're trying to put pressure on yourself to train 5 or 6 days a week, but you're just kind of going through a lot of turmoil, or you've got, like, a ton of, like, you're taking 20 credit hours at university or something,
yeah, maybe
these sort of things can...
Or you have a significant other that doesn't support your goals, whether that's diet, nutrition, or like your actual sport. Like,
yeah,
that's
so
hard
there's
too.
Lots of these things that kind of fall into that. What are you doing other than lifting?
Right.
That can dictate and help guide you towards, like, what's going to be the right amount of training volume.
Yeah.
And your right amount of training volume is going to change month to month as your circumstances change.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if you're getting into it and you want to start increasing your training, you kind of just have to make sure that you're not just adding more, but that you're taking something else out,
yeah,
and that you're kind of maintaining that buffer. I think that, as for me, like, the second thing that I think you should consider is how long you've been lifting. And this is where I think there's a little bit of nuance, and I kind of have two opinions at once. But I think that for the most part, if it's your first year, maybe year and a half, 3 days a week is probably great. You probably don't need to do much more.
Sure.
Because you're a beginner. So you're going to recover within 48 hours of the last stimulus.
Right.
And if you can get by with doing the minimum effective dose to get better, then you have somewhere to go to when that stops working. So, like, once you start to plateau, then maybe you add a fourth workout.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that starts to go, you add a fifth workout. But if you start at, you know, 6 workouts a week with double days, if you plateau, where do you go?
Right.
You have nowhere to, you can't go up anymore. You're already doing the most that you can. So if you can get stronger and get better technique, hitting 3 workouts a week with maybe coming in for technique work once or twice, because I think that we need to separate out, and this is where I kind of goes into the next bullet point, which is how much do you want to train? Well, if you're a beginner, but you really love it, maybe only load 3 workouts, but come in and, you know, do some light technique stuff or some core work or, you know, something outside of that, like, heavy loading realm.
Sure.
Because, you know, just squatting 5 heavy days a week when you've never squatted before, you're going to make progress for sure. But you would have made the same amount of progress squatting twice a week probably.
Right.
So I think that it's important to kind of look at, you know, how long have I been doing this? And not just how long have I been doing it, but how long have I been doing it seriously?
Yeah.
And, you know, what else is going on? Because if you've got nowhere to go, then we got to, like, reevaluate, and then you feel like you're losing something because you have to take a workout out because
exactly.
You start to plateau and you can't recover as much anymore. So I think that, you know, that duration where start at 3 days a week and then change stuff when it stops working.
Right.
Because you can just milk that. You know, like we do with all of our, you know, brand new people is it's, you know, it's a 3-day-a-week program and they get stronger every week for like 12 to 16 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we start moving to different things. And I think that, you know, you don't, and it's hard with weightlifting because it's so much fun and people really love it. And I think that's why people want to, they're like, oh, if I want to be great, I got to do double days on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and, like, heavies on Tuesday, Thursday, and, like, you know, more work on Saturday. So there's this huge, because that's what you see the best people in the world doing.
Not always, though. And well, here's the thing. So here's my take on it. So, like, how long have you been lifting? So I think when people start out, they have this huge passion for what they're doing. They want to get as good as they can, as fast as they can, right? So the people that first start out, they just want to be like, oh, I want to make as much progress as I can, put as much weight on the bar as I can, as fast as I can. And the problem with that is that you could hit a plateau faster, and then you might have to do some radical things to change your training or dial back things, like Grayson was saying. Like sometimes people are, and this goes into like how much do you want to train? And some people are like exercise fiends, and they're like, oh man, I gotta get in the gym. Oh, if I miss a workout, I'm gonna die. And so like they have that mentality of just like, oh, if I miss one training session, everything's gonna fall apart. I'm not gonna be as good as I can be. But the reality is we've had athletes come in here from other, you know, other training modalities and other, you know, aspects of fitness and sports, and they'll come in here and they'll be like, you only want me to train 3 or 4 days a week? Like, what? Like, but I train 7 days a week right now. It's like, yeah, that's a lot. Like, but you're not gonna be able to recover if we trained you 7 days a week. Like some of the stuff we're doing, if you train 7 days a week, your body would just break down. Like you wouldn't be able to recover. So the idea is that we build in rest so that our athletes can thrive, they can push themselves, but with the right amount of dosage. So how long have you been lifting? It matters because training age, some people started off a little bit earlier in life, some people start off later in life, and that training age, the amount of training that you've had under a barbell or any kind of apparatus that involves a barbell, whether that's powerlifting, squats, bench, deadlift, you know, the traditional strength sport stuff, but snatch and clean and jerk, if you've been doing that for, you know, 5 years, the amount of training that you can tolerate isn't going to be the same as somebody that just started out. Like their maxes, they don't even know their maxes. That's why we start them off on linear progressions, because they haven't been lifting that long. We don't know what their maxes are, what their potential is, and their technique and their strength are always going to be imbalanced when they start off. And then we have to catch those things up and then progress them into a level where those things are moving at the same speed in the same direction, and hopefully get them to the point where they want to train as much as they need to, not as much as they want to. Like the idea that you need 6 training sessions a week might not be the case, because if you can get away with 4 and make just as much progress, you're using less time and you know, you're getting more results out of it. So why spend all this extra effort if you're just breaking yourself down more and you're not able to recover from it?
Yeah, and I think that's where it's kind of important to remember that strength isn't built from lifting the weight. Like, you doing squats isn't what makes your legs stronger. Right. It's you recovering from doing squats that makes your legs stronger.
Yeah.
So like the frequency of stimulus, you know, that it doesn't, you don't get more results from that. It's really that you get, you know, if you recover and adapt, and if it all it takes is 2 days a week to recover and adapt and get stronger, if you stay patient and you take it slow, eventually it'll take 4 or 5 times a week to get stronger and adapt and recover.
Right.
And that's kind of the goal. You want to get there, but you don't want to skip the part where you get stronger easier than you'll ever have the chance again. Like, you don't get to redo being a beginner.
Right, exactly.
And if you're patient and you're like, no, I'm just going to stay at 3 days a week. If I'm getting stronger, I'm getting stronger. And then once I stall, then I'm going to add more. I think if you can take that approach and be patient, it can really be good long-term planning. Now, where I admit that I deviate from this is that a lot of it is that people like to work out 5 days a week.
Yeah.
I think that that's fine.
Sure.
You know, if you have the time and you're recovering from it, and you know, it's a feasible thing for you to do and you're not missing a lot of workouts, that's great. I think you should do it, especially if you've been lifting for longer than like 6 months, sure, you know, a year, something around there. I think it's totally fine. I just think that, you know, I've inherited CrossFit athletes where I've had to program 6 workouts a week and program an active recovery day, because I'd come into the gym and I'd catch them doing crazy stuff on their rest days. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's an active recovery day, so I'm going to do 10 minutes on the minute of 5 muscle ups and then like just a couple hundred wall balls to like loosen my legs up. And so that, you know, when you're, and this is kind of where you have to kind of learn as a coach, you know, sometimes if you just tell somebody, I need you to stop doing all of that stuff, you're going to get a ton of resistance from that, because they feel like they need to be doing it.
Right.
So if you write in an extra workout or two for those people that are really addicted to exercise that says, come in, row 200 meters, and then foam roll for 5 minutes,
sure,
and do 5 rounds of that. So like, if you program in those extra days for people who are really hooked, it's a really good way to kind of bridge that gap and show them like, you know, these low intensity sessions or these days that you just stretch, and like maybe you warm up and stretch and that's your workout for the day. Like, it's That's a really helpful way to kind of break people from that exercise addiction realm.
And I think I line up with you on that aspect. And don't get me wrong, I will always advocate for people being active over being inactive. But when you're training for a sport and you're trying to get as good as you can be, or you're just trying to maximize your results, more is not always better, folks. Like, just because you can fit 7 days a week of training in doesn't mean you should. You should have rest. You should have the ability to let your body recover, whether that's active recovery and coming into the gym, doing a rowing session and maybe foam rolling after, that's fine. But I'm just saying, like, sometimes people take it overboard and they just want to do everything all the time. And it's just like, you need to take a step back or you're going to burn yourself out. Because, like, these are the same athletes that a year later, they're not in your gym anymore. They moved on to something else because they have, like, exercise ADD and they can't just, like, stick with the same thing. So, like, they have a hard time just, like, getting better at one thing over a long period of time. So, like, yeah, that's the hard part is, like, yes, weightlifting can be a little bit monotonous in some cases, but if you break up your training and you're not doing it every single day of the week, it keeps its interest. Like, it's challenging. Exciting. Yeah, it's more exciting. It's challenging. Like, you get more opportunities to kind of, like, push yourself and things like that. But at the same time, like, this isn't a sport where you can do it 7 days a week and not beat yourself up. If you're not giving yourself time to recover and not giving yourself adequate amount of sleep, nutrition, and recovery, like, you're not going to be able to sustain that level of effort for a long period of time. And that's what it's about, right? Like, sustainability. Like, what can you do over the long term?
Yeah, because nobody's going to be their strongest 18 months or 2 years after they start.
Sure.
You know, it's as much as we want to get really strong really fast, it's a really slow process. You know, it takes lots and lots of time to get the number of reps that you need. And trying to shorten that amount of time by doing double the number of reps,
right?
You know, it's that minimum effective dose where it's like, you know, or maximum recoverable volume where it's like, okay, you're doing as much as you can to get better, or you're doing just enough to continue to make improvements.
Yeah.
And, you know, depending on how all in you are to the sport, you know, that kind of changes things up. And if you're like, okay, I'm really into this, I've been training 3 days a week for, you know, the first, like, 6 months or the first year. I'm getting really into it. I want to do the 5-day workouts. I'm never going to tell someone no.
Right.
Like, yeah, if you want to train more, that's okay. But I'm going to make sure that you know that it means that, you know, adding two more workouts means adding more diligence with your sleeping and eating. And it's going to be a little bit harder and you're going to take some getting used to.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, sometimes it's fine to kind of alternate between the two. Like, if you're like, I know that I'm off, you know, if you're a teacher or something and you're off in the summer, yeah, I'm going to have you train a lot.
Sure.
You can train a lot more when you're off work for, you know, that couple of months. Or, you know, kids in school playing other sports versus kids, you know, off for the summer. You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe if you're in school and playing other sports, like, 3 days a week is going to be fine because you got to work and you got other things to attend to.
Exactly.
But over summer, if you don't have school, okay, we'll turn it up to 5 days a week. And so I think that you have to be able to kind of move between different training frequencies. Like, I love 4 days a week.
Yeah, four days a week is great. I think it works out well for a lot of people.
And, you know, because you get, you know, everything in twice, basically, and it's a really nice way to split things up. So I think that, you know, don't feel like you have to be locked in just because most training programs are written for 5 days a week because that's what most people want to do. But don't feel like you have to do that.
Yeah.
And it can be, I train 4 days a week for 2 weeks and 3 days a week for 1 week. Because you have to, you know, the next bullet point is just learning how you recover.
Yeah.
And communicating to your coach, like, hey, I've noticed that I can train really hard for 2 weeks, but if I try to train hard for a third week, it kind of falls off.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, then we need to deload on every third week instead of every fourth week.
Sure.
Because I think that, you know, it's really about fitting it to how well you rest and recover. And if you're, you know, having a hard time with a deload in every fourth week versus every third week, you want to first look at, you know, your rest and, you know, those kind of things, or your hydration, right? These sort of you know, external factors.
Yeah.
But also, it might just be that you're a guy that needs to deload on the third week, and that's fine.
Yeah, and a deload doesn't mean, like, take the week off and day drink, guys. It means, like, come in, do some light stuff, prepare for the next heavy week, like work on some technical aspects of the lifts, get some training in, but it doesn't have to be, you know, too heavy to beat you up. And so like, I think what sometimes people come in and the attitude that you get is, I'm only here for the heavy workouts, right? So I'm only gonna do those and that's enough. And so if those people can get away with doing 3 days a week and training the heavy days and still make progress, then the people that are doing five times those 2 extra days of work and not necessarily making as much progress, it shows that like maybe they're overextending a little bit.
Yeah, it's way better to train super hard 3 days a week than to like barely survive training five.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, and that brings us to the last part of just like, how well do you rest and recover from what you're doing? And so a lot of time people will, you know, do all the sessions in a row during the week, and then they'll be super beat up by the last workout. Or, you know, they'll maybe get like 1 day of rest in between. But like, how when your coach says, I want you to take an active recovery day or take a rest day, like, do you give him attitude? Do you think about like, oh, he's just trying to take away my ability to be more athletic? Or do you look at it as like, okay, I need to dial back and just work on my recovery, because recovery is important too. So like, when you get an athlete that says like they don't want to take a rest day, or they don't think they need to take a rest day, like, how do you approach building that thing into the, like, the idea that like, I don't have to be pushing 6 days a week, like double days? How do you get them to buy into dialing things back like that?
Well, so kind of like I said, is showing them what the structure of an active rest day would be.
Sure.
Because people who don't think they need to rest, if you tell them to take an active recovery day, they might think you mean jog 5 miles.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, kind of showing them that like, well, like an active recovery day, you know, I think importantly, isn't just doing literally nothing,
right,
like you said, day drinking. You know, it's like your rest day should be, you know, you should do a little mobility work, maybe row, or just go for a walk.
Right.
Like get, like you still want to move, but you want to do gentle things. And I think that, you know, there's, you know, a lot of really good evidence that, you know, you look at, you could present like the data on, you know, if you're trying to build muscle, you need to, like, this is about how long it takes for a muscle to recover from a specific workout. So, like, that's why you see bodybuilding workouts structured as push and pull.
Right.
Or, like, body part splits where you're hitting arms more frequently because they recover faster, and legs less frequently because they don't. And I think that, you know, you want to make the factual argument. It's like, no, it's not that I want you to be lazy. It's that I want you to be optimal.
Sure.
And yeah. If you're, you know, if you're brand new and you want to squat 6 times a week, that's not to say that you should never squat 6 times a week, but you probably don't need to be there for a few years.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, because you're trying to just get the right amount of stimulus to get stronger and bigger. Right. And, you know, when you start, you know, phrasing it as that, where you're like, no, this is how you do it optimally. And if you can recover, like, if you treat your recovery like your training, where you're like, all right, say you're trying to move up a weight class and you're, you know, training too much, you're going to be expending too many calories, right? So it's going to be harder to be in a calorie surplus if on your active recovery days you're rowing 10 100 meter sprints.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're going overzealous and you're not resting, you're going to have to eat even more.
Sure.
Which for a lot of people moving up a weight class, eating enough is a really big problem. It's a hard thing
to do. It's a hard thing to do, I agree.
So, phrasing it as like, no, if you recover well and you just focus on stretching and stuffing your face and hydrating and preparing for the next workout, that's where you're growing, is you're growing on your rest days.
Right.
You're not growing while you're squatting.
Right.
And I think that, you know, kind of putting it in that perspective where it's like, no, it's just that this is what the optimal rest scheme is.
Right.
You know, like, you can squat every day.
Sure.
But if you get to the point that you have to make progress, that's fine. But if your legs are still growing 3 days a week of squatting, then yeah, let's keep doing 3 days a week until that fixes itself.
Okay.
And I mean, I really think that with squat frequency, like, it seems like 2 to 3 is right for a lot of people.
Yeah, know? I think that's the case too. And we have one guy on a hatch squat cycle, and we've done the hatch squat cycle ourselves. So that means you're squatting twice a week. You're doing back and front squat on the same day, but you're only doing it twice a week. You're not necessarily like getting a whole bunch of other squat days in. You're still doing snatch and clean and jerk and things like that. But I think that that's an indicator of, like, you can make a lot of progress on a cycle that only has squatting 2 times a week, like dedicated squatting.
It matters how hard those workouts are. So you might not be able to make progress if you're, you know, doing sort of easy reps or like sandbagging or like, like if you're not taking your squat workout seriously and you're only doing it twice a week, I mean, you're probably not going to make good progress. But if you're really hitting squats heavy and doing a bunch of them a couple days a week, you're going to continue to see strength go up. You know, like splitting those things up can make a huge difference for where you're going to progress. So I think that,
I have a question. So like, we've been talking about a lot about training frequency, how long you've been training, how long you've been lifting, what kind of things you're doing in addition to weightlifting, and how much you want to train and how well you recover. But what are some indicators that somebody hasn't recovered well? So if somebody comes into the gym and they're doing all these things that you program for them, and maybe it's a little too much, like, how do you know that they're overextending? Like, how do you get the athlete to recognize that they're not recovering as well as they think they are? Because sometimes people come in here and be like, yeah, I'm good, I can do this workout, and then they just completely crumple on the some of the lighter percentages, and just they can't get to their working weights and things like that. So how do you determine if an athlete is not recovering properly, or how can they tell that they're not recovered properly?
Yeah, I think there's a handful of things that go into that, but one, you can just watch what their disposition is like when they come in the gym.
Okay.
If somebody walks in the gym and looks like, you know, they just had the worst day that they've ever had in their lives. Like, so if they come in and their head's down and it's all frowns,
sure,
versus somebody comes in and like says hi and like is excited and hops right into warming up.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of notice those things. So if there's not like a, you know, we don't do like a, everybody has to do a vertical jump test to measure their readiness for the day, but you can kind of tell like who's going to need a light day and who's not, just based on, do they like groan when they pick up the bar, or are they like smiley and ready to get to work?
Sure.
You know, that's a really good measure. It's like, okay, well, if somebody's moving a little slow, they're taking longer than they usually do. This is where you have to kind of know your athletes, but it's like, man, this guy's warming up he's doing 10 more minutes of foam rolling than usual. He's grimacing a lot. It seems like his legs are pretty sore.
Sure.
You know, so that's kind of a factor that you can look at. If you're rating yourself, you can say, like, did you have to force yourself to come to the gym today, or were you excited to come to the gym today?
Okay.
Those are a little bit of cues for, like, how well you're recovering, your readiness level. But then also you can, you know, you want to look at, you know, are they getting the reps done, but they look slower than usual?
Sure,
and I think speed is one of those things that I like to look at. It's like, okay, well, maybe, all right, well, last week it was moving this fast. We tried it again this week. It's a little bit slower, so we probably need to take it off next week.
Sure.
Or back off a little bit. And I think that, just like seeing what their attitude is, you can kind of feel what a person's energy level is by, you know, talking to them.
Yeah.
That's why it's important, you know, when you have your lifters coming in, to kind of check in with everybody. Like, hey, how you doing today? And they're like, oh, work was garbage. Just be like, okay, well, maybe, like, put it in the back of your mind. Don't tell them right away, because they might have a great session. Sometimes you feel bad coming in and it goes really, really well.
That's true.
So you don't want to like put it in your athlete's head like, oh, well, we'll probably take it light today. It's like, you know, you want to watch them warm up and then make that decision if it seems like it's kind of getting to be there.
Sure.
And then the longer you work with people, you kind of start to, and the longer you work with yourself, if you're just training on your own, like you just want to take good notes or make mental notes of, okay, these are the days that I feel bad. It's like, okay, well, I always feel terrible on Wednesday. So maybe I shouldn't do 3 days in a row. Maybe I should train Monday, Tuesday, rest Wednesday, and then come in Thursday for that workout. And you just want to kind of start paying attention to what patterns seem to be netting a favorable result for you. You know, do an honest evaluation where, you know, a lot of times if somebody's having an off day and it's like, okay, well, we're just going to work 10% lighter. I just want you to get some good quality reps in. Making sure that people know that that's not like a loss, right? Like, just because it's like, say we're programmed for 80%, but like you didn't sleep very well or your dog ran away or something.
Sure.
Like, it's okay if you're not at 100% today. let's practice where you can. And that's where I think that, you know, the philosophy that I have is it's all practice.
It's all practice.
And I have a plan. This is what I want to do. But if the plan isn't going to work, practice your lifts and do some squats.
Yeah.
And even if it's not the percentages you were supposed to do, don't worry about it based on that. But when you have those bad days, you want to rate, like kind of evaluate yourself and have this conversation with your athletes of, well, is this something happened today? Is this, there's too much work going on? Or is this, you forgot to drink water for the last 2 days?
Right. Yeah.
Or you spent 14 hours in the sun and you got a wicked sunburn. So, okay, that's something to take into account.
Yeah.
And that's why I think when you're planning your training, if you're writing your own programs or writing for your athletes, you can have a template of this is where I want to go. These are the things that I want to focus on. But I think that a lot of times it's a waste of time to fill in minute details longer than 2 weeks out.
Sure.
Because I think that, you know, there's so many factors that, like, you know, in a perfect world, if we had a very controlled system, we could predict exactly how much volume everybody can handle.
Right.
But I can't predict what you had for dinner, or if it didn't agree with you, or if you got food poisoning, sure, or, you know, these sort of things. So to say, I'm going to write a 6-month program and this is exactly where you're going to be,
right,
you know, at the end of these two cycles to, like, get you to this point in the next year, where, like, in week 3, if you get the flu, you just wasted a lot of time because
yeah,
you can't just go in and change it. You have,
right,
to, like, adjust fire.
Yeah, and you have to recover from the flu.
Yeah, so predicting those sort of things, like, if you're feeling sort of sick, take an extra day off.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of try to learn these little things about yourself and try to recognize, like, do I need to go into train or do I just feel bad about myself when I rest?
Right.
And if you feel bad about yourself when you rest, like, you need to reevaluate how you're thinking about things. Because I think that, you know, harping back to my usual soapbox, like, if you think that you always need to be doing something, like, I think that's a bad outlook.
I think so,
like,
too,
the,
yeah,
the need to constantly be busy, or
right,
if I'm not training, I'm doing it wrong. If I'm not working, I'm doing it wrong. It's like, make sure that you have time that you're just, like, going to sit down and read a book or, like, binge watch a show. Like,
right.
Or, like, cook dinner, or, like, go see some friends.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Keep in perspective that, you know, the gym is just kind of one aspect of your life.
Right.
And it might be a really, really important one to you. And I know that it is to me.
And it is for a lot of people.
But,
like,
I intentionally set aside time, and I know you do too, to say, no, I'm not going to go in and work out today. And I'm not going to go in and work today. Mm-hmm. I need a day that I just kind of take a break.
Sure.
And it's really hard for me to do. I have a hard time taking a break. I feel guilty every time I'm not here.
Okay.
But I know that as far as the longevity goes, right? So if it's your training or your business.
Your mental health. Yeah.
Your business or your mental health. If you feel like you're compelled to work all the time,
right,
try to find a moment to be quiet and just, like, set aside time to go visit with friends or make some dinner or,
yeah,
like, have a date night. Like, I think it's really important to have those things kind of balanced out, because if you're just always at work or training and you don't have any time to, like, go do something you like throughout the week, like, even, you know, Tyler's been getting really into golf, and
yep,
he trains more than everybody else, and because he's got a schedule that affords it.
Sure.
And we push pretty hard. But he still goes and plays golf a couple days a week to get his mind off weightlifting.
Sure.
So you've got to have those kind of other hobbies.
Outlets.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to have outlets.
Because weightlifting is not always going to be nice to you.
No, for,
like,
sure.
You're always going to love it, but sometimes it's, like, really mean.
Yeah.
So
sometimes it's going to spit you out on a clean, and it's not going to be very easy to squat that percentage. And that's another thing is, like, when I look at my program, I don't think of it as the Ten Commandments. It's more like a guideline. It's like, what do I need to accomplish in this session? And where can I push? And where do I need to just keep on track? And sometimes, like, you come in and you didn't necessarily come in with the best situation. And so you just take it as a guideline. It's like, I'm gonna do all the stuff that it says, just maybe not at the exact percentages that it says all the time. And sometimes, like, there's that give and take of, like, Like, that's why Grayson programs ranges. Like, sometimes you can be at the top end of the range, and sometimes maybe the lower end of the range. It just depends on how well you recover from that previous workout. But, like, sometimes people look at their programming as like, oh, I have to do this. I have to hit this percentage, or I'm a failure. I'm not going to be able to snatch any better if I don't. But the reality is that if you look at your program and you say, well, I'm supposed to get up to this number, and you just approach it as like, today's practice. I'm going to practice getting up to this number. And it's just like meditation. Not every meditation session is going to be like this perfect, you know, flawless, oh man, that was so zen. It doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes you get really distracted and you just come back to the breath, or you think about that anchoring spot that you're working on, and like you have to come back to it multiple times, but it's still a productive session. So in that aspect, sometimes when you come in and you've had a rough day at work, or you had some things and you maybe have to dial things back, still getting in the training is important. But just keep in mind that like these are guidelines, that when we write programming, like I'm not forcing you to do 90%. I'm asking you to do 90% on this given day.
But and we're not an oracle.
Yeah, I'm not an oracle.
I can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know how well you've eaten or recovered or slept or any of that stuff. Like, I just come in and I try to help athletes optimize their sessions and get the most out of it that they can. But it's up to them to make sure that they come in and they have the recovery and the necessary tools outside of weightlifting to come into the gym and me provide them the coaching that'll help them excel. Because if you come in and you got 3 hours of sleep, you didn't eat, you only ate breakfast, and then, you know, you had a real stressful day at work, and then you come in and you want to snatch 90% 6 or 7 times in the EMOM or something like that, like it's going to go tragically. It's not going to, or maybe it'll be fantastic. I don't know. But the reality is that life is dynamic. And if you take your programming is authoritarian and it has to be done a specific way, it has to be done at this percentage, like it there's no room for, like, you know, some gray area or some give and take, then, you know, you're going to have a lot more resistance mentally to that type of training.
You might be more likely to be injured.
Yeah, or more injuries.
If you don't, and as an athlete, being willing to say, hey, coach, I feel kind of crappy today.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be able to go very heavy. I'm not feeling super confident with this. What can I practice instead today?
Sure, yeah.
Because, like, again, the training program is a guideline to help keep people on track. It's, you know, we're thoughtful. We're not just throwing things in there, but
right.
We want each week to build on the next. But if something is happening to you that is not going to allow you to do what I thought we'd be able to do,
right.
Just saying, like, oh, what can I do instead? Because at the end of the day, the most important things for progressing in weightlifting are recovering from your workouts, practicing your technique, and being consistent over a really long time.
Yeah.
And if you're emotionally burned out or physically injured or, you know, chronically under-eating, all of these sort of things can be a factor. So to kind of sum up, like, more isn't always better. Like, especially if you're a beginner, try to stick with 3 days a week until it kind of stops working, or until you're like, this is my thing. And then you can move to a 4 or 5 day a week workout.
Yeah.
But,
or maybe like 2 a days on those same 3 days, just add in training that way, like come in the morning and the afternoon, three days a week.
There's a lot of different ways that you can split things up.
Yeah.
And don't feel like you have to be lumped into the way that you see your favorite lifter training.
Right.
Right. Making sure that you're balancing how much you can train and how much you want to train, and that you're counting all the other things, all the other workouts, physical labor. If you spent all afternoon digging ditches, you probably shouldn't deadlift today, because like that, I've hurt my back pulling weeds and then trying to deadlift afterwards. You know, like these
sort of things
compound. And if you're not being honest with yourself, or you're feeling like you're obligated. So again, like the training is fun.
Right.
This is, you get to do this.
Yeah,
so,
you get to do this.
So don't feel obligated to do something for your coach.
Right.
Your coach would rather you not be injured.
Right.
So if you're like, hey, I think I need to take it light today, can I just do some technique work? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd rather see our athletes happy and healthy than in here every day, and then they don't show up for 3 months because they tore a rotator cuff or something stupid.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, exactly. But like, we've talked about this. This is very important to us. So we've talked about this for a long time, almost 45 minutes. So we're going to go ahead and move into just a small portion of philosophy.
Yeah,
but so like that's training frequency is important, and it matters to us. And we hope for that we've provided you some valuable information and some things to think about in your own training.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, feel free to shoot us an email or ask on Instagram. But yeah, hopefully you guys got a little bit out of that. So on a totally unrelated note, so this is something that I've been kind of thinking about. And the way that we listen to music now is very different than, you know, it was even, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that with the rise of things like Pandora and Spotify, we kind of live in a playlist age where everything is shuffle. So right. It's, I like this song, I'm going to put that on here. And you're kind of curating these like handful of songs that you like, and maybe you heard it once and you're like, oh, that's a good song, and you throw it on there, and then you listen to it in your playlist. But I'm wondering if we're missing something in the way that we listen to music now. I'm wondering if playlisting is leaving out hidden tracks.
Right? Or stories because, that albums tell.
Exactly. So a lot of times albums, you know, artists don't usually throw songs on in any, like they don't just say, I guess we'll play it in this way.
Sure, yeah.
Because like, you know, if you see a band play live, they always plan the set list. We're going to open with this to build energy, and then we're going to do this, and then this is kind of the peak, and then we're going to do the best song.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
So they organize it that way. And I think that, you know, maybe not every band, but lots of bands organize their albums that way, and artists organize their albums that way. And if you're always just cherry picking, I like this song or I like that song, you might be missing. So, like, are we looking at the individual song as the piece of art that we're trying to listen to, but missing that the whole album itself together as a unit is what the artwork was?
Right
Because they didn't just write one song, they wrote 11 songs,
right? Yeah.
And they put them in an order, so there's a probably a good chance that they wanted you to listen to the songs in that order.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, this is a something came up recently, like with a new album that I listened to, and from the beginning there's an intro and then there's a song that pertains to the intro, and then there's a couple more songs, and then like an interlude, and the interlude will have like a skit or something, and then the next song will pertain to the skit or the interlude, and then there'll be like three or four more songs, and then an outro, right? So like the album tells a story, like it's a progression of like the way the artist wanted to develop the album. And so I think the way that we listen to music nowadays is kind of like detached from that aspect. It's like a mixtape, right? It's more like back in the day when you would just create your own CD of all your favorite songs. So like now we have this playlist culture that's kind of derived from this mixtape culture, where like you put a bunch of different artists and a bunch of different songs on one list, and then you play all those things, and then, you know, that's cool. But sometimes you miss out on some of these hidden aspects of like some of these albums that get created. They have a narration to it, and there's a story that builds. So like I know a lot of punk albums that you listen to, like they'll have a story that goes along with the way the album flows from the beginning to the end. And a lot of rock albums do that too. Some hip-hop albums do that too. There's a lot of like skits and intros and things like that, and sometimes you can go without that stuff, but a lot of the time it ties into the way the album's portrayed and what the artist is trying to like develop overall, and the sound of the album and the feel of it. And I think that people miss out on that sometimes. Just the way that we listen to music is kind of disconnected from that way, that aspect of it.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with, you know, attention spans. Because
true.
So something that I've been trying to do, and, another thing that you miss out on in the playlist is that a lot of times the single that gets the most radio play or the song that's the most popular, in my opinion, isn't... Sometimes it's not the best song on the album.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that.
So, like, a lot of times, you know, it's like, oh, I heard this song. So you go to the album and you listen to the album and you go, oh, man, but track 4 is, like, really good. Like, I didn't even know that, like, I didn't know that this song existed. Right. So, like, if you never go back to, like, the full album, like, you can miss out on, like, some of your favorite songs might be some of the more obscure songs that band did. Like, you know, if it's mass marketed, there might be something that speaks to you more personally than it speaks to people generally.
Yeah, that's true.
So there might be one of those songs that you're kind of missing out there. But I think that it also comes down to our problem with attention span. Because like we've said, it's like, it's like if you're always trying to work or be distracted by something, mm-hmm. like sitting down and listening to music, not just putting music on in the background of your training session or putting on a mix or something while you're
washing dishes or making dinner.
Exactly. Yeah, doing chores.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of times we treat music as background noise.
Right.
And I think that it serves a place there. Sometimes it's nice to just have something on in the background that you're not focusing on.
Yeah.
But have you ever just sat down and only listened to music lately? Because I caught myself and I hadn't, as I used to all the time when I was really passionate about, punk rock when I was, 16 and stuff, I'd just sit down with my headphones and just listen. And that's it. All I was doing was listening to music.
Yeah.
But now it's, I realize it's no, I'm driving or I'm, cleaning the house or
sure.
I'm training. So I think that testing your attention span and trying to develop that, it's mindful listening. It's like, okay, I'm going to sit down and listen to this album straight through.
I think
that's
a good way to do it.
And I'm going to see what the hidden gems are here. And I'm going to see if these songs relate to each other and see how I feel at the end.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is the art.
Right.
And I think that if you can learn to be more focused and intentional when you listen to music, you might find that maybe that song you thought you liked, you're like, ah, this is kind of vapid. Or maybe that song that you wrote off and you listen to it again and you really focus on it, you're like, I don't really like the tune of this, but dang, the lyrics are so good.
Right.
There might be a handful
of things. Or there's the opposite too. There's the opposite where the beat is on point, it's really good, and then the lyrics are trash. This guy's just mumbling, I can't understand anything he's saying. There's no content to the lyricism. And so if you listen to music mindfully and you listen to what the artist is saying, what they're talking about, sometimes you'll realize it's kind of dark, or this is they're more positive than I thought they were being.
Or this is really funny.
Or this is funny. Yeah, it's hilarious. There's all kinds of various perspectives that you can have while listening to music, because the artist is telling you something. They're saying something to you. And they're describing a feeling or whatever music appeals to you. I don't listen to very much pop or country or anything like that. So those types of narrations to me aren't in appealing at all. So, but when you listen to some other types of music, you'd be surprised what people are saying. That's more aggressive than I thought. or that's more offensive. People might find that offensive, but music is so varied. But if you don't take the time to listen to it, what are you subconsciously putting in your brain? Because they're saying something to you. There's lyrics associated with the song, and sometimes people memorize those lyrics faster than they memorize, any other thing, a textbook or lessons from a class or whatever.
To memorize lyrics, it would be really,
but if you don't think about what the artist is saying or you don't listen to music mindfully, you might not get the whole experience out of it. And I think that there's value in just sitting down and listening to what some of these artists have to say and what their story is, because sometimes that's what they're telling you is their story, and it's interesting and fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, most everybody that's, not, top 40, and some of the top 40 people are writing their own songs.
Sure,
it's unfair to mischaracterize that. But, outside of the, factory song where it was okay, this is written, who's going to do the song? And then, that's kind of it. But, I think that there's a lot of value in going back to, think about, the band that, influenced you the most growing up. What was that song that you always remember, that you have the most nostalgia for? And then give yourself the challenge of, I'm going to sit down and listen to that whole album this afternoon. Mm-hmm. And just instead of watching two episodes of The Office, I'm going to listen to this album, and I'm going to sit in a comfy chair and pet my cat or whatever.
Right.
But your main focus is on actually listening to the music. And it's really, it's surprisingly hard to do.
It is.
I've been trying to make my way through a lot of punk albums that kind of got me into music, mm-hmm. and then revisit them a little bit. And I just made myself sit down and listen to Agent Orange's Living in Darkness.
Okay. How'd that go?
And, you know, because when you get Agent Orange on a playlist, you just get the song Bloodstains.
Right, this one song, yeah.
But the whole album is great. Like, it's really, really well done. So it's been really fun for me. This has been something that I've been playing with. Just going back and, like, re-listening to the songs that, like, made me passionate about whatever it was when I was a kid, you right. know? And I don't know. It's been nice to get away from mixtaping a little bit.
Yeah.
And just
yeah.
listening to, like, the whole album. I get a lot out of it. And it's weird how distracted we are that, like, we can't even listen to the same person sing two songs in a row.
Right.
It's really strange.
That is strange. And I had a thought about the way that we listen to music. So, like, how do you discover new music? A lot of the time, these apps have algorithms built in to help you find new music, but it's all based on your preference. So basically, like, it's your own internal bias of music. It's just like, yeah, I like this one, and they're just going to keep showing you that same thing, like same style of music, the same like genre of music, or the same type of artist,
or even the same songs,
or even the same songs. Yeah,
playlists that they build for us when we run the music here at the gym, they just put like the same 32 songs on the playlist every
yeah.
week. Like it's all kind of the same stuff. So yeah, you're right. It is hard to branch out and find new things that you didn't even know you were into.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the recommendations are gonna go that way. Where you're like, oh, I haven't really heard this band before. But yeah, I think.
But sometimes those algorithms will get it totally wrong, and you'd be like, this is trash. I don't want to listen to like hear another song like this ever again. Like sometimes it's like I don't know how they decided that song fit into what I was listening to.
Yeah, but. And that's the kind of tricky thing is
yeah.
like, you know, and I don't know if it's important to be constantly discovering new things
or stick
to
what you
already
know
what you like.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, because they, you know, one of the things that they say is that basically your coming of age music, like what you listen to between 15 and 25 is probably going to be what music you listen to all the time.
Okay.
You know, if you think about it, you know, like baby boomers listen to a lot of, you know, that, you know, 70s rock stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, there's, you know, people who grew up in the 80s really like 80s East Coast, 80s and 90s East Coast hip hop.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know,
true.
Like that's kind of my style, but I don't really like a lot of the new stuff sure. going on. So I think it's okay to like what you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
it's and all like, personal
and,
preference.
And, yeah. But, like, you know, maybe branching out sometimes or, you know, I've been trying to, you know, like, it's like, oh, maybe I should, like, listen to more classical music and appreciate some of that. And then, I don't know, I just get kind of bored of it. And
yeah.
it's like, you know, so it's one of those things where it's like you can appreciate that something is good, but not want to listen to it all
right.
the time. And I think that, I don't know, just the thing that I found interesting was the attention span. And just like our artists having to change the way that they write songs so that they're all better singles.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's like, are they writing 11 singles or are they writing an album?
Right,
and
right.
I wonder if that, you know, changes the way that people are approaching writing and
maybe.
Putting these things together. Like, is it more important to have your song be able to stand alone than it is to
sure.
have it kind of integrated into a broader context or a broader theme? Because, like, maybe the songs aren't related to each other, but they're all about the same sort of stuff.
Sure.
Or, you know, maybe they are all interconnected. And the only way to know that is if you actually listen to them all in a row.
Right.
And so here's our Strength Academy homework for the week. Pick one album and listen to it not on shuffle. And just revisit something that you like an album you loved or a song that you love. Find that song in its original context and see if the artist is telling a bigger story than the single song that you're listening
right.
to.
And some albums are like those Netflix TV shows where it says, like, watch in any order. So, like, I'm sure there's some albums that are just like, you can listen to whatever song in any order you want. But some albums do have a storyline to them, like a narrative. And it's a good way to approach it if you haven't done it before.
Yeah. So I think that's part of our be less distracted.
Yeah.
So yeah, to summarize, I think that we might listen to music wrong. It's fine to train as much as you can recover from, but sometimes less is more, and you make better progress if you just take a step back and keep yourself in check.
Yeah. I completely agree. All right, folks. So that sums up the episode for today. I hope you got something good out of it. And if you have any questions or any feedback for us, head over to Apple iTunes and leave us a review. We would appreciate it. And if there's something we can do to make it better, just give us a shout out at asaweightlifting@gmail.com, or you can contact us on Instagram at Albuquerque Strength Academy, and we'll get back to you as soon as we get something from y'all.
All right, guys. Well, until next week, happy lifting.